So we are speaking with Senator Jim Inhofe, of course, the Oklahoma senator and chairman of the Armed Services Committee. We've got a little bit of a situation. You've probably heard of it. The Iran crisis. Let me go ahead and start off by asking you, what exactly do you know about the whole situation, and how soon were you briefed on the Qassem Soleimani incident?
Okay, Ben, let me start off backwards. I think it's better.
Sure.
If you want to know, if any of the listeners out there want to know all the intimate details that are hard to get, I did an op-ed piece yesterday in the Washington Post. And if you don't mind, my website is inhofe.senate.gov, and people can access that. It was a very long one. We covered all the details, so that gets the details. But in the short version, we had a situation back during the Obama administration where, and I'm not saying this in a negative way about him, because his priorities were different.
Sure.
He did not have a strong priority in terms of building a defense.
Gotcha.
In fact, he, in his last 5 years, reduced the defense spending in his budget by 25%. That's never happened, even after, I don't think that was even happening after World War II.
Oh, wow.
But
fascinating.
As a result of that, we were suffering. We went into this thing where we didn't have, you know, we came out of his administration with China and Russia both having equipment that we didn't have. The hypersonic weapons that they had developed, we haven't even to this day developed those. So we're in a catch-up situation. We are doing very well now, and this last defense authorization bill, which we talked about on KRMG extensively, is now behind us, and we are back in good position now. But as far as Iran is concerned, we have to remember that during the Obama administration, at that time, the issue was use of chemical weapons in Syria. At that time, he said that the red line is if you use chemical weapons on people, then you'll have consequences. Well, they used them on their own people in Iran, in Syria. And nothing happened. So the red line kind of went into an area where nobody believed it around,
sure,
around the world. And so this president came along, and you know, and I know there's a lot of people out there listening to us right now that really, really hate this guy, but I don't. I've seen what's happened to America. I've seen what's happened to our economy, and primarily the rebuilding of our military. So when the time came with Iran doing all the things that they were doing, he made the statement, so long as it's not, you know, we want to negotiate, but don't kill Americans. You kill an American, and you're going to have consequences. They killed an American, and he's dead now. So he did the right thing. He changed the perception of America all around the world. And so now the people realize that, and certainly Iran realizes that the actions have consequences, and we will act. Now, the reason I say that I think that was very significant, they have a pretty well-known foreign minister in Iraq called Sharif, and he came right out after the after this took place, and he said, we don't want an escalation. It's the first time they've said that. And another way of saying, we're ready to negotiate. Well,
right,
I was talking to the president at 9 o'clock the night before last, right before while all this stuff was going on. And he was our conversation was, we're hoping, of course, that the reaction that was coming from Iran was not going to result in the death of an American. And they knew what would happen if it did, and it didn't. Now, what's going to happen from this forward, I don't know. But I would say this. I think the most important thing to come out of this is that people now know, not just in Iran but elsewhere, that actions, the terrorist actions are going to have consequences. And that's where we are today, and there's still some unknowns out there. But I think they did a good job.
Okay, so we had Senator Langford on yesterday, and we asked him this same question. What do you think Iran's intentions were with the airstrike yesterday, and do you see any more acts against the U.S. in the future?
Okay, now I don't know what his response was, but my response is that there's some doubt, and I hesitate to say this, but there are a lot of smart people that are saying that when Iran had its response, that they really did not want to kill an American, that they took a step to try to avoid it. Now, you got to keep in mind, there are three American bases that were under attack at that time. You have to be a pretty good shot not to kill anybody if you're going after three with the equipment that they were using. But I think there could be some truth to that, that there was an effort not to do it. That would really have been the smart thing to do, because by making an attack, they can satisfy their base that hates America in Iran. But then you have to keep in mind, we don't hear much about it, but the people of Iran has a serious problem right now. They have a dissatisfied public. People are starving to death over there, and they're very unhappy, and they're not in a position to be real patriots for their country, Iran. And that puts them in a situation that they have not been in before. The second thing where they haven't been in before are these sanctions. The economic sanctions on Iraq, by not just us but other countries, have put them in a position they don't have the capability that they had before. So it's a weaker Iran. Now, they're liable to come out. They can do things through proxies, but in other countries that may be not directly related to them or traceable to them. But nonetheless, that theory is out there that maybe they intentionally did not want that to happen. And again, when Zarif comes out and says, we're ready to negotiate, I think that's a happy ending. So that may not have been consistent with what James said in his interview yesterday, but that's my feelings about it.
Well, one thing he did say is that this will affect oil prices, and I wanted to bring it back to, you know, Oklahoma Americans, people on side.
Yeah.
And so what do you think the impact of these sanctions, this conflict will have on people living in Oklahoma in the short term?
See, you got to keep in mind, we're now in America is now in a position where we're number one in oil and gas production in the world. Now, that wasn't true before. We went through the Obama administration. They had a war on fossil fuels. That's coal, oil, and gas. And we had a serious problem. Now, we are cranking that out in a way that we have not been before. So right now, our domestic production is such that we're not dependent on other countries as we have been in the past. I don't think it'll be a noticeable change for those of us who live in Oklahoma, or in all of America for that reason, in that respect.
Fantastic. So you mentioned that now that Zarif wants to come to the table, that there will be negotiations. Say, in, you know, a worst case scenario, these sanctions don't work, the negotiations don't work. What steps do we have to take to ultimately avoid a war with Iran? And then at what point will a war with Iran become inevitable?
I don't think it's going to be inevitable. I don't think it is. I think right now the groundwork is laid, and the problems that they have there, they're not in a position. In fact, if they would read, I cover that thoroughly in that Washington Post editorial or op-ed piece that I'm suggesting people read. I don't think they want a war. I don't think we, I know we don't want a war. And I think they're in a position now to know that if they, well, I would say this. If you had a different administration right now, that might not be the case. But with this administration, they don't want a war.
Okay. And then I didn't get an answer from you earlier, so I wanted to roll all the way back to Qassem Soleimani. It feels like nobody knew who he was until all of this went down and he eventually was killed. What info did you guys have on Soleimani that made his death the only option to proceed?
Well, first of all, he was the one who was put together and was guilty in the loss of an American life. Now, that's something that no one questions at this time. But he's been there. He's been there now for decades. And he has been the guy, not necessarily behind the scenes, but he was in the number two position. And it had all the appearances that he was calling the shots. Now, the arrogance that he had, he went in. You got to keep in mind that there was a sanction on them by the United Nations that he was not supposed to be traveling. There's a travel ban on this guy. And yet he totally ignored all these sanctions. He ignored what United States and the UN were attempting to do with the sanctions. And he was even over in Iraq getting selfie pictures with the people over there and making statements that, let's see, what was the one that he said that... you don't have that, do you? Anyway, statements that, that America is not irrelevant, and he was kind of basing that on what he had learned from the previous administration, and that's not the case. So it's not as if no one's heard of this guy. He's been the force behind these actions, and he was the one who was prominent right up to the day before the strike took place. So he's been prominent. He's been a bad guy. A lot of people look at him and look at al-Baghdadi and how bad that he was. He, al-Baghdadi wasn't nearly as bad as this guy. And I think there's no one who would disagree with that in a position to be knowledgeable.
Senator Inhofe, I wanted to ask you, I'm sure you were either watching or listening to President Trump's address yesterday after Iran's retaliation strikes on Iraqi bases housing U.S. troops. What do you think happens now? I mean, it's sort of the idea that I got is Iran has sort of put the ball back in our court, and President Trump's response saying we're going to have sanctions, we don't want a war, that was sort of his response. So now what happens next? Is it a waiting game? Are we waiting on Iran to do something else? Are we taking actions to stop? What do we do now?
No, I think that he made it very clear, and I remember it happened that I was visiting with him at 9 o'clock the night before the speech that he made yesterday.
Sure, yes.
And at that time, he said, "We want to make it real clear that while we will adhere to our red lines, we will not be pushed around by anyone. But we now know that the sanctions have taken their toll on Iran." Actually, the sanctions on China, you use the same argument there, they've been very effective. But in Iran, they started from a position where they didn't have, they had economic problems to start with, and they have, as I mentioned before, domestic problems with their population because they're over there, they're starving to death. And so that makes it open for an effective negotiation that we've never had before. Now, this came from a conversation I had with him at 9 o'clock the night before. He said that same thing in the speech that you're referring to. So I think that's what is next. You know, you don't plan too far ahead on a lot of these things because you're dealing with people who don't behave in a predictable way. But the fact is that we're now going to be able to have meaningful negotiations, in my opinion, that was the message.
Right. And so I don't want you to spill any info you can't spill. And then if you don't know, feel more than welcome to say you don't know. I know you're not a fortune teller. But when do you expect negotiations to start with Iran?
That we don't know. We just know that the top guy there is the foreign minister, and we know that it's going to happen. I don't know anyone who can answer that question as to when is it going to happen. But I think sooner is better, and because the sooner that starts, the less likely for some terrorist tragedy to take place that may not even have anything to do with Iran. So sooner is better, but nobody knows.
Senator Inhofe, thank you so much for letting me talk to you. Is there anything else that you wanted to add before
I
let
really
you go?
Yeah, I really wanted to talk a little bit about the current status of this
impeachment process. That you know what? All this Iran stuff had taken up all my mind space.
I
totally forgot about the impending impeachment Senate trial that may or may not happen if Nancy Pelosi never hands over the. Go ahead and give me your
insight.
Yeah, well,
Ben,
your
I was getting
insight.
A little impatient with you there. I didn't want to run out of time.
No, I'm sorry.
Let me share a couple of things that I think might surprise some people. I remember the last time I was on for about a week ago on KRMG, we talked about what an impeachment is. The House does an impeachment. Anytime 51% of the people in the House want to impeach somebody, there could be no impeachable cause. They could just go ahead and do it. It takes a simple majority, and that's what they did. But impeachment in itself doesn't mean that much. We remember about Bill Clinton. He was impeached. But then it does send it over, and the impeachment articles are sent over to the Senate, and the Senate has to sit in judgment. Now, it's a miserable process to go through. I can remember that we had to go through the same thing with Bill Clinton.
Right.
We had to sit back you can't talk to each other. You have to sit for 6 days a week. You can't get any business done. It's going to create a problem if this happens. But up until today, it's going to change today, but up until today, I don't think that Nancy Pelosi, she's in charge. I don't think that she knew for sure what she was going to do. And for this reason, she has a far left liberal constituency, and they're kind of divided right now. Some of them are saying, come on, Nancy, let's get on with it. Let's get that stuff over there so we can start beating up the president again. And then the others saying, well, wait a minute. The polling isn't looking all that good. Are we in the liberal end of this thing really benefiting from it? And I think that an argument could be made that they're, well, in fact, his numbers have gone up substantially. So that's a dilemma that she has. Her people are divided right down the middle. But they're now being put in a position by Mitch McConnell that she's going to have to do something today, because all he's saying is, you know, there's nothing we can do until we receive impeachment articles. Well, she was saying, well, I don't want to send them over till we know just what your rules are going to be over there. Rules are established most by the judiciary, not by members of the Senate. And so that's something we couldn't tell her. And so that was the standoff that we had, and it has to end today. I don't see how I can go any further. And I think they will come over today, but that's just an assumption. Keep in mind, they haven't for weeks now, and that's put them in a position where there are a lot of people who aren't real excited about going in any further than they have been. Let's look at the some 31 Democrats that are running for re-election in the House of Representatives that are running in areas where the president's very popular. It'd be very difficult to go into your campaign after you've voted to impeach a president that's popular in your district. So that's playing out there at the same time. So it's a complicated thing. I think you're going to see a breakthrough today, because I don't see that she can get by with any more time in spite of the divided attention that is coming from her base. So let's wait and see what happens. This could be a big day.
Right. I wanted to ask you one more question, because it sort of ties into what you've been sort of hinting at, but I want to just flat out ask you, do you think Nancy Pelosi has been so resistant to hand over those articles because she feels that maybe there's not a strong enough case, or maybe, you know, she has regrets that maybe she shouldn't have pulled the trigger on this impeachment process so soon or even at all? Do you think that she's just delaying the inevitable because she knows that this is going to go nowhere?
Well, she knows it's going to go nowhere, but I'm not sure how that plays into her thinking, and I certainly have no way of getting into her head. But I do know that she has a divided constituency, but she knows that that's got to come to an end, and I think today's the day that's going to do it. So I think that she has motivation to have some regret that they got into this thing and actually voted for impeachment as they did. It's going to take its toll on some people, and she may not inure to her benefit. You got to keep in mind, Nancy Pelosi, on a day-to-day basis, has to defend herself to her own people to continue to be the Speaker of the House. And I'm sure that is probably the paramount thing that's driving her behavior at this time. Let's find out.
All right. Senator Jim Inhofe, thank you so much. I'm so sorry for completely going blank on the other thing I wanted to talk to you about.
Well, we'll cover them both. We'll cover them both and make sure to let's tell everybody Happy New Year right now.
Absolutely. Okay? Have a Happy New Year, everybody. Senator Jim Inhofe, thank you so much for letting me talk to you. And I'm sure you're very busy today, so I'll let you get back to it.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. You have a good one, Senator.
Yes, sir.
All right.